As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to Prospects to Pros, the podcast that talks about the guys that are in the NFL that just got drafted, the guys that are about to get drafted in the NFL, and everything in between. And this is a big day for us. Huge day. Well, for one of us. Me, I'm just window dressing at this point. I'm Andy Staples, joined by Dane Brugler, the Athletic's draft guru. And Dane, you put out a mock draft today. This is a big, big, big day.
Mock draft 1.0. Yeah, it's the first one of the year, first one of this process. And, you know, we don't even know the exact order yet. We don't know, which underclassmen are going to be in this. We had a big announcement this week. Olu Fashanu, the Penn State left tackle, who was originally in my mock draft. As I mapped this out over the weekend, he was a top five pick. He was going to be going very early. And then on Monday, he decided... And I was told last week that it was about 50-50, like, you know, his parents are big on education. He's only 19 years old. There were a lot of things pulling him back to Penn State. He was very, very surprised at all the NFL attention that he started to receive in September and October. And so I think this all caught him off guard. And
that actually
he's just
sounds
more comfortable
like Justin
going
Herbert
back.
As a junior.
Justin Herbert was
stunned by, he's like, wait, me? and ended up going back, and it all worked out fine for him.
Yeah, and you hope the same things for Olu, who, you know, is a lot of, you know, you get a lot of people saying, oh, he's passing up all this money, and you know what, money's not the motivating factor for everybody, and for Olu, hopefully, you know, he's gonna probably take out a big insurance policy, probably get some NIL money in the process. You know, we'll be talking about him in the 2024 class, but for going back to my original point about we don't even know the underclassmen that are going to be in this. But this is a very underclassman heavy first round, with this first edition of the mock. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think the biggest challenge for this mock for me was, okay, where do the quarterbacks go and where do the wide receivers go? Cause the quarterbacks and wide receivers, there's a lot of split opinions around the league. And just a reminder too, the mock draft, this isn't about what I think teams should do or, you know, this is more about what I'm hearing.
What do you think they're going to do?
And looking at trends, looking, okay, well, this is the type of general manager who prioritizes this position here or, you know, that type of thing. So, it's all based on what we think they will probably do or might do.
All right. So we'll start at the top. The Texans, while most of the draft order is still in flux, we can be fairly certain the Texans will have the number one pick.
Yeah.
They need a quarterback. You have them taking Bryce Young from Alabama, and I commend you for choosing the guy who's best at football over the guy who's best at traits, because it drives me nuts when teams go traits over simply being good at football. And you've mentioned on this show multiple times, Bryce Young is an outlier. We have not seen but two other sub 6 foot, sub 200-pound quarterbacks get drafted, and neither of them were drafted very high. You are putting this one at 1-1. Why is that?
Well, and it's interesting with Nick Caserio, okay, the general manager of the Texans. He's been in the NFL, in an NFL front office with an NFL franchise since 2001, so a long time. He's never been with an organization that drafted a quarterback in the top 50 picks. Now, a big chunk of that is because he's with the Patriots and they had Tom Brady for all those years. But my point being, we don't really have a frame of reference of, you know, what Nick Caserio is, you know, really specifically going to be looking at the quarterback position if we're talking about a top five pick, a number one overall pick. So, you know, we don't really have anything to go on. This is it's a mystery how he's going to attack the quarterback position. For all we know, you know, he might look at, you know, bulking up the roster and going with a non-quarterback here and then, targeting a quarterback in the 2024 class. And so there's a lot of unknown with the Texans, but we do know they need an upgrade at quarterback. And if they can look past the size with Bryce Young, I think he should be the pick there first overall.
Well, they also have Cleveland's pick from the Deshaun Watson trade, so it might be that they get a quarterback with that one too. If they're in love with Will Anderson or Jalen Carter, you could see them doing that, and then going, you know what, if somebody falls to us, great. Otherwise, we move on to 2024. That makes sense. Does my heart good to see the next two, because somebody's not reaching for a quarterback that they shouldn't be reaching for. You've got Will Anderson, the edge from Alabama, going to the Bears. You've got Jalen Carter, the multi-talented, multi-tool defensive tackle from Georgia, going to the Lions. The idea of Jalen Carter and Aiden Hutchinson on the same defensive line is terrifying.
Yeah, well, and throw a Lee McNeil in there, the former NC State defensive tackle. Yeah. He's been a really nice player for them. It just fits exactly what the Lions are trying to build up front. And, just same thing with the Texans, mentioning how they have a pick in a little bit later with the Browns pick. The Lions, this is the Rams pick at number three overall, which, you know, it's crazy how we were talking, going back to the, Stafford trade and how, those first round picks they traded, they're all going to be late first round picks. This is the third overall pick right now, and Stafford might never not.
Yeah, I was gonna say no one saw Bryce Perkins starting down the stretch for the Rams. So this is
third pick could actually it might be the second pick by the time it's all said and done if the Bears win a few more games. So and then the Lions pick right now is at 13. So they're in a position where they don't have to reach for a quarterback if they don't want to. They can go with truly the best player on their board, which could be, one of these two defensive linemen. And then with the Bears, right now picking number two, I know some of these losses are tough to swallow, but you know what? Justin Fields is progressing, and you're getting a higher draft pick. Like, for the long term, this is a positive outcome for them. So Will Anderson, you know, he's the type of guy that could be a cornerstone player. Here, a trivia question for you. Alabama players, first two off the board in this draft. When's the last time the same program had the number one and number two overall selections in the draft? It was sometime in the last 25 years. So fairly recent, definitely some guys you've heard of. So you got to go back a little bit, but not too far.
Let's see. Was it USC? Is that the school?
It was not. Big Ten team.
Big Ten team. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so would it be Michigan? No. No, because the
two defensive players.
Oh, two defensive players. Okay, because Michigan had Jake Long, but they didn't have anybody else who got drafted that high.
Right.
Okay, Big Ten, two defensive players, 1-2. Oh gosh, why am I having such a hard time with this? Because you're assuming it's Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan, but it's not any of those.
No, it's one of the ones you mentioned.
It's Ohio State. And no, it's not. It's Michigan.
Nope.
Okay. So it's Penn State. It is Penn State. Okay. Who is number one overall from Penn State?
2000.
In the last 25 years, LeVar Arrington.
Yep. Courtney Brown went one.
That was. And LeVar Arrington.
Arrington went two. Yep. Exactly. That's
okay.
So obviously, the Browns, that didn't quite work out for them, but LeVar Arrington was a pretty good player. It doesn't happen often. It's been 20 years last time it happened. So it's got a realistic shot of happening again this year.
Well, and the thing is, like, if you look at your mock as a college football reporter, Now, we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the playoff. Alabama's kind of Rasputin as these things go. Like, until I see a top four without the minute, I'm not going to believe it. But if they have the top two draft picks, you also have Brian Branch going in the middle of the first round. Drew Sanders going later in the first round, who doesn't play for Alabama anymore, but was on their roster until he transferred to Arkansas. And then Jahmyr Gibbs as the final pick of the first round. Like, it's disappointing. Maybe not as disappointing as Clemson, which had a much easier schedule and is not going to make the playoff. They just lost to South Carolina, but you've got three Clemson defenders in the first round.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, that's it's a lot of times it comes back to the quarterback, right? And, you know, just not getting the consistency you need. And, it's kind of crazy to see how things played out down the stretch for South Carolina specifically, but then also for Clemson. Clemson's well represented. Alabama's well represented. Ohio State, who obviously did not have a good weekend, they're well represented. So, you know, a lot of the usual suspects when you talk about the programs that are producing the most talent. But, you know, you also have, a Big Ten offensive player mixed in, which, you know, we don't see
that
very
often.
But yeah.
Ohio State's had some quarterbacks drafted in the first round. So it's not that unusual. But I guess the two winners of the transfer portal, well, three, because we mentioned Drew Sanders already. Mm-hmm. But Christian Gonzalez, the corner from Oregon, who was at Colorado. Colorado must have had the greatest secondary in the world for a terrible team last year.
Mekhi Blackmon.
They had a few good players.
Not USC, probably going to get drafted.
Yep, and then Jared Verse. And Florida State, you know, Mike Norvell just needs to hang a sign like, do you want to be a first-round edge rusher? Come transfer to us. We've turned into a factory. Jared Verse, going number 15 to Atlanta.
Yeah, pretty good, selling point if you're trying to bring in some transfers. For a guy that was even hurt and banged up for a lot of the year, I mean, he's still atop the ACC in tackles for loss with 14.5. His ability to deconstruct blocks is really impressive. It's not just speed. It's not just power. It's, he can do it in a lot of ways. And so, that ability to create pressure off the edge, that's what the Falcons need. And right now they're picking right in the middle of the first round. Out of the Will Anderson territory, not going to get Miles Murphy, but right there in the middle. I mean, Jared Verse, I think that's maybe a little bit higher than some people think he's going to go. But, you know, he's a pass rusher, he's productive, and he has traits that will translate. So Jared Verse, I think makes sense for them in the middle of the first.
Now, normally I'm a production over traits guy, but there's an excuse for this guy I'm going to bring up. So you've actually got two tight ends in the first round. You've got Michael Mayer going to Cincinnati, which Michael Mayer and Joe Burrow together feels like a great combination. But you have Darnell Washington going to Tennessee to be under Austin Hooper's wing with the Titans and just deliver crushing blocks for Derrick Henry. Darnell Washington, for those who don't know, is a 6'7", 265-pound tight end at Georgia who has like 1% body fat. He is a freak of nature, but his production, especially his receiving production, is not what you'd expect from a first-round tight end because there's a guy named Brock Bowers who exists, and you will hear all about him in the 2024 draft.
And Darnell Washington is so unique because he's probably closer to 275 now. I mean, he's the leanest 275 you've ever seen. So it's just we haven't really seen a guy like this before at the tight end position, a dominant blocker. I mean, you think about what the Tennessee Titans want to be, their offensive identity. Darnell Washington fits perfectly because of those blocking skills, but also because he's an ascending pass catcher. He's getting better in that area. And, you know, when he's targeted, good things usually happen. So Darnell Washington, I think, I remember it was the last show or two shows ago we talked about, when's the last first round tight end that has really lived up to it? I have two tight ends in this mock, like you mentioned with Mayer and Washington. And I really wanted to get Tucker Kraft in there out of South Dakota State, who's you know, one of my favorite players in this draft. It just didn't work out, and I wasn't going to force it. But I mean, he's a top 50 player. And then there's also two seniors who I think belong in the top 50 with Luke Musgrave out of Oregon State and then Dalton Kincaid at Utah. So this is a, like, it's not a top heavy tight end class where we're going to have a Kyle Pitts or, you know, a player that should go top 10, top 15, but in that 20 to 50 range, I'm probably going to have five tight ends that at least it, for me are worthy of a spot in that range. So this is a look shaping up to be a really, really good tight end class. And, you know, Mayer to Cincinnati, I love that fit. It's you know, first of all, it's a great story. He grew up a Bengals fan, just growing up just south of Cincinnati in Kentucky. Joe Burrow's his favorite quarterback. His cousin is a major league catcher that plays for the Reds. So, I mean, just a ton of storylines. Yeah, love it. But more than anything, you know, you think about 10 years ago, the Bengals drafted a Notre Dame tight end in the first round in Tyler Eifert. You know, and that was good for stretches. But, you know, I think Mayer with, you know, because we think of the Bengals and they're so reliant, or they have been, on the big play, you know, getting Ja'Marr Chase down the field, getting these explosives. Michael Mayer just, it adds another element to that offense where he can just feast over the middle of the field. You know, one of the best, one of the strongest contested catchers at the tight end position. I think, you know, we've seen the last few years. Just, I think he adds another element to that offense that they could really use right now.
And you mentioned Dalton Kincaid. If you want to get a good look at him, he'll be playing against USC in the Pac-12 championship game on Friday night. He destroyed USC in the first meeting. It was maybe the most dominant game I've ever seen a tight end have from a receiving standpoint. He had, like, I think, 15 catches. It was over 200 receiving yards. It was, there was nothing USC could do to stop them. So it'll be really interesting to see, can he do something like that again, or will the defense be focused? Because it was interesting. That was after Kwithi got hurt, because Utah has another really good tight end who just got injured and knocked out for the rest of the season, who was actually their number one target at tight end going into the season. And then Kincaid came along, and now he's their number one target in general in the offense. So this is going to be a chance for him to kind of show off and show what he can do. So let's talk about the quarterbacks again. We talked about Bryce Young. You have CJ Stroud going five to Carolina, and probably the most controversial person in the QB class and the upper reaches of it, and the ones where we're talking about first rounders, you got Will Levis going to the Colts at number 14. I just wonder with Will Levis this season, has it soured scouts on him, or do they just feel like, okay, this particular new offensive coordinator, Rich Scangarello, who came for the 49ers, didn't click with him the way the coordinator last year, who's now with the Rams and is now the OC of the Rams, the way Liam Cohen connected with him last year.
Right. And that's, you know, I keep coming back to this with quarterbacks. You have to separate the reasons from the excuses. And with Will Levis, you have to mention, you know, the new play caller. You have to mention the losses on the offensive line. You have to mention no Wandale Robinson.
The offensive line is dramatically worse this year.
Yeah. And I mean, that's part of the conversation here. It's not to totally excuse, you know, Levis from, you know, just not being a more productive player, but it's part of the context here. Do you wish you watched that Kentucky offense and you saw the quarterback elevate the offense a little bit more? Yeah, you do. But a shaky supporting cast, you know, the play calling is not doing him any favors. I mean, there is plenty of blame to go around. And so for teams that are, you know, going to bet on the traits, which most of them will, that they're still going to look at Will Levis and say, I can understand a path where he's going to be a productive pro and, you know, be a guy that can help us compete for the division and a spot in the playoffs. So you look at the Colts, they've tried the veteran route. It has not worked. You know, maybe, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the quarterback carousel this offseason. You know, has Aaron Rodgers become available? You know, Derek right. Carr. I mean, who knows? There's a lot of unknowns at this point. But, you know, they have not addressed the quarterback position early in the draft, you know, since Andrew Luck. And, you know, it's just something that if one of the quarterbacks is there, do they make a move? And Will Levis was available in this mock. And so, you know, he's the pick. I don't know if it's the best fit in considering that the Colts really need someone that can step in pretty soon and, you know, help them. But you know, at least it's a swing. And if it ends up being a swing and a miss, then so be it. But, you know, we know that the ownership there is really going to be pushing for this organization to draft a quarterback and at least take a swing. And Will Levis could be that guy.
Well, and getting to play with Ryan Kelly and Quentin Nelson and getting to hand off to Jonathan Taylor, that's a pretty good way to ease a quarterback in. Now,
yeah,
it's not going to be that easy because you're in that position, especially given where they are, you're probably going to be counting on him to start.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly, that's what you want. And so, I mean, Will Levis he does need development, but he's an older quarterback. And you know, this will be his second full year starting. You kind of throw him into the fire, see what happens. The biggest thing with me with Will Levis is I want to see him play faster, stay ahead of things instead of being reactionary. And so, will he be able to do that when things are only going to get faster in the NFL in terms of defenses and the way the game moves? You know, it's hard to say. And, you know, like, we don't even know who the head coach is going to be for the Colts next year. So,
right.
Will Chris Ballard still be the GM? I think it's trending that way. We know the ownership's not going to change. That's about all we know about the Colts at this point.
Well, it seems like Irsay has created, you know, a philosophical set that we understand. Like, in fact, even bringing Jeff Saturday in as the interim coach tells us what the philosophy he expects is. So I do think that they're going to want to rely on that offensive line and that running game. And then they want a quarterback who can complement that. So let's talk a little bit about CJ Stroud. I still have my worries about him in a dirty pocket. And he's going to have a lot more dirty pockets in the NFL than he saw at Ohio State. But then in that Michigan game, and look, they got dominated in the second half. But there are some throws that CJ Stroud makes where you're just like, oh, yeah, not many other people can do that.
Yeah. I mean, he's a smart rhythm passer. You know, when everything's on time, in structure, he can execute at a very high level. When things fall apart and he's asked to make plays out of structure, that's where it just, it does fall apart. And it's something that you worry about in the NFL because often, things don't go as planned. And you have to be able to be a creator and not just a passer. And that's where the concerns come in with CJ Stroud. That's why the league is really split. Again, you know, this mock draft is based off of what I'm hearing. And I'm talking to everybody that I know in the league, getting their opinions, what they think. There are some that don't think CJ Stroud is going to be a top 10 pick. They think he's going to fall. They think, you know, he's going to, you know, Justin Fields fell out of the top 10. Dwayne Haskins fell out of the top 10. Could CJ Stroud be the next Ohio State quarterback to fall out of the top 10? It's certainly possible because he does not have a consensus rating in the NFL among scouts and evaluators. So, but again, with that said, there are some that still believe that he'll be a top 5, top 7 pick. Because of the positives to his game, the fact that he is a very smart player, the way he can, you know, pre-snap and post-snap, understand what the defense is doing and make the right read. And again, as long as everything's on time, I think that he can make it at the next level as being a successful starter. It's just, you know, can he find that rhythm when things fall apart? That's the question mark with him. And again, same thing, the conversation we had with the Colts, it's a similar conversation here with the Panthers, where we don't know who the head coach is going to be next year. Right. We know, that it just feels like the Panthers are, they're without a compass right now. You know, like what's the direction they want
right.
they're headed?
At least with the Colts, I can tell what Ursa right. wants. Like, right. I don't know what David Tepper wants.
No, I don't think he knows what. I mean, I think he's a new owner who's still trying to figure this out. It's a lot of the same issues that I think Haslam had when he, you know, bought the Browns, and it was like they try all these different things and they didn't work. And it's same thing with Tepper now. Is he going to be trying, you know, what's the new direction he's going to go in terms of a head coach? Is Scott Fritter going to still be the GM? So what's the compass? What direction are they headed? So I think there's a lot of question marks with the Panthers, but again, we do know that they need a quarterback. The future of this team is not on the roster right now at that position. And right now they're slated to pick number 5 overall. And it, you know, who knows? They got a win over the weekend against the Broncos. Who knows? Maybe they win another game or two. So we'll see what this pick ends up being. But we do know quarterback is going to be something they're going to look at in the offseason.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
So, Dane, who is in this mock, which is a first-round mock, by the way, that if I had told you last year you'd have them in your mock 1.0, you'd have said, oh, God, no, absolutely not. Or who is that?
Lucas Van Ness, the Iowa defensive lineman, who's not even a starter for the Hawkeyes, redshirt sophomore. I guess I heard the name last year, but I had yet to watch him, so I didn't have any context for just how good he is, or you know, even what his play was all about. But this guy is a grizzly bear playing out there on the defensive line. He's 6'5", 275, can play inside, can play outside. I've got him going number 17 to the Chargers, so a little bit higher than I think most people would assume. But, you know, he gives them some position flex up front. If you want to rush off the edge, you want him to, you know, give you that interior disruption. I think just add something else to that defensive line. He would be definitely one that I include in that mix.
Yeah, that sounds like A.J. Epinesa a little bit.
I think he's much more explosive, but I agree. Like, I think he's...
But, I mean, didn't start for Iowa and right. was probably the best prospect. And...
You think of the power that he has in his hands. I mean, that's what he brings. What it separates Epinesa and Van Ness, I think, is just there's a little more explosive twitch with Van Ness. And that's, to me, the difference between, you know, Epinesa being a second-round pick and Lucas Van Ness possibly being a first-round pick if he comes out and, you know, decides to enter this draft. So he would definitely be one. Another one who is just been a guy that will not be denied. Devin Witherspoon, the corner at Illinois. The Illinois defense is my favorite defense in college to watch. It's so much fun. Well, they're gonna have a lot of draft
Walter's
picks
up for head coaching jobs. You may have a new favorite team soon.
Yeah, no kidding. He's got dudes. But you know what? It goes back to Lovie Smith and some of the guys that he recruited there. So give him credit. Yep. Give credit to Bielema and Walters and their staff for the way they developed these guys, because they've just gotten better each year. Quan Martin is going to be a mid-round draft pick. Sidney Brown, Chase's twin brother, who had two picks over the weekend at a fumble recovery, scoop and score against Northwestern. He's really making a move up. He's 5'11", probably going to run a 4'6", so doesn't have, you know, necessarily the traits, the high-end traits you look for, but Sidney Brown's just a good football player, and so somewhere in day three, he's going to come off the board. But Devin Witherspoon, watching him over the summer, you know, there's a lot to like, but it just seems like he's taken his game to another level this year. He's a dog. I mean, he competes every single snap. He takes it personally when a quarterback throws his direction. It's like, really? You're going to test me? Like, he seems to take it personally. And you love to see that from your corners. At Witherspoon, he's got that competitiveness, that tenacity. But he's also a smart player. He can anticipate routes. When the ball's in his area, he understands how to go make a play. Now, he will arrive a little quickly at times. And I'm interested to see what he runs at the combine. Because it's... He's not going to be a 4.3 guy. That's speed is not his game. He just can't be a 4.5 guy. You know, if he runs a 4.47, right, great. You know, that sets, you know, I don't think that will change from where I have him. But also his weight, you know, he's right around that 180 mark. So he's not a big player. So if he doesn't have high-end speed at a position that's a stopwatch position, and he doesn't have the necessarily the build that teams are looking for, that could knock him out and, you know, make him a day two pick. But towards the end of the first round, with several of these teams looking at corner, Witherspoon should at least be in that conversation, because a lot of what he does, the strength of his game, NFL coaches are going to love. So I wanted to include him in this mock.
Yeah, I am fascinated by the receivers, because you, in terms of how you set them up and where you had them going, I agree completely with you. You've got Quentin Johnson going to Jacksonville, giving Trevor Lawrence a different kind of threat on the outside. And then you have Jordan Addison going to New England, which feels like a very good fit with Mac Jones. He feels like a receiver Mac Jones would have played with at Alabama.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. And, you know, it's always tough with Belichick, because you know he wants to draft defense or offensive line here. You know, like that's his preference. But, you think about what Jordan Addison could be for that offense, you know, the spark that it could provide. You know, Jacoby Myers is a free agent. You know, there's a lot of question marks about what that wide receiver room is going to look like next year. I don't know how they feel about drafting a receiver in the first round after, you know, the N'Keal Harry experiment did not go as planned. So it's not a pick that I feel great about in terms of it coming to fruition. But I do think, because of the spark that Jordan Addison would provide for Mac Jones, for that offense, that's something that I would really like to see. Well, put it this way, if I'm in that division, I don't want to see Jordan Addison go to the Patriots. So that's how I know that it's something that makes sense, at least. We'll see if Belichick would actually follow through with that. But and then with Quentin Johnson, it's like I
was
going to
say, it would give everybody in that division great receivers, by the way.
Hey, yeah, why not? And it would make a lot of fun. I mean, it's a division that's becoming, you know, tougher to figure out. I mean, the Bills are still, I think, the favorite, but, you know, with the way that the Dolphins are coming on with that offense, the Jets are playing good football, and the Patriots are still Patriots. So that makes it a lot of fun. With Quentin Johnston and the Jaguars, you know, you watch Trevor Lawrence and how special he is and how much better you think he can be. And it's just, you know, you want to surround him with the best talent available. And remember, they did trade for Calvin Ridley, so they've got him in the mix next year. But you think about, they're just missing some size, especially on the outside. Quentin Johnston can provide that for him. 6'4", 215, but he's also, you know, going to run in the 4.4s. He's a really good athlete. So you think about Quentin Johnston, Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk as your 1 through 3. I think Zay Jones is still under contract technically. So
Travis Etienne to catch the ball out of the backfield too.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think that you're looking at an offense that is ready to go. I mean, it's ready to help your young quarterback, realize his potential. So, you know, I don't love it, just because, you know, trying to figure out how early the receivers are going to come off the board is kind of tough. Quentin Johnston has not had the most productive year. I think he only has 5 touchdowns. He's been banged up a lot with an ankle, but I think when teams get their eyes on him, especially at the combine and how well he moves at that size, the way he can track the football, I think there's a good chance he ends up as wide receiver 1 for a lot of these teams.
Well, I also think he's been kind of targeted by opposing defenses because he is the biggest threat TCU has down the field. They run the ball well and with their backs and with Max Duggan. But if they want to really get down the field, Quentin Johnston is the scariest guy they have. So
yeah, no doubt.
I do think he gets outsized attention from defenses. And if you put him in an offense where he's got some other dynamic receivers around him, then all of a sudden he becomes that much more dangerous. One other receiver I wanted to mention, you got Jackson Smith and Jigba in here at 29 to the Vikings, which would be patently unfair to put him on the same field as Justin Jefferson.
Right?
Like, is this a case of like, well, Ja'Marr Chase was drafted very high, but have we just forgotten how good Jackson Smith and Jigba is because he hasn't played this year?
Yeah, well, and I think with Smith and Jigba, I think he's he's going to be looked at as a slot only for a lot of teams, you know, because he's probably a 4-5 athlete. He's not a burner, you know, good size, but not great size. So a lot of his profile is perfect for the slot, but not necessarily on the outside. And so that's something that could hurt him a little bit. You know, it's basically a lost season for him, which is a bummer, you know, for Ohio State and for Smith and Jigba. But, I mean, he's still a player that should be in that late first-round mix, early second-round mix. And when you look at the Vikings, that Adam Thielen contract's a little tricky, but they could clearly use an upgrade over Thielen. And, you know, he's like 32 years old now.
Yeah.
If you just trade those two, you put Smith and Jigba in that Thielen role, man, they're ready to cook. That'd be Kevin O'Connell.
It's not fair.
No, that would be the offense that Kevin O'Connell wants to run. That would be a lot of fun to see play out. And, you know, it's Kirk Cousins, you know, he wants to see it. I can guarantee you that. It'd be a fun match if it ends up happening.
Well, speaking of fun matches, I'll go in your mock one pick after that.
Yeah.
You got Jalen Hyatt going to the Chiefs. You got essentially Patrick Mahomes getting his new Tyreek Hill if that happens.
Yeah, and you think, you know, they basically have, you know, one of their big free agent signings last year was Marquise Valdes-Scantling. I don't know that he's necessarily lived up to what they thought he'd be. I think they have an out after this year to get out of that contract. But Jalen Hyatt just, you know, put him in that role, and he would be that vertical threat, that true deep threat that, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid want on that offense. Help open up the entire offense. Jalen Hyatt with that speed, with his hands and tracking skills down the field. Man, that's, again, that's the type of, you know, when if that pick happened, you know, if you're Denver, the Chargers, or the Raiders, you're looking at that saying, crap. Like, I mean, it's just, or the Bills. I mean, you do not want to see that happen.
I want to backtrack a little because it's unfair to call him their next Tyreek Hill. Jalen Hyatt, to this point, is not proven that he can be what Tyreek Hill. Now remember, Tyreek Hill only had one real year in college as well, but and Hyatt has only had one very productive year in college. I don't know that we've seen the willingness to deal with contact that Tyreek Hill has from Jalen Hyatt. I think that would be the key difference. He has to develop that if he wants to really ascend to that level. But in terms of a take the top off a defense guy,
yes,
in that offense, you're right. It would terrify the rest of the division.
Right. He doesn't have Tyreek's, you know, agility and suddenness to make guys miss. And I mean, no one does. I mean, Tyreek Hill is a complete, you know, unicorn. But Hyatt with that track speed, you know, he should run in the low 4.3s, maybe the high 4.2s in the 40. And you know, the tracking skills downfield, that's a big part of it too. So I think, if he's available there, it'd be tough for the Chiefs to pass on a weapon like that.
It's so much fun to think about. And that's what I like it when you get really diabolical with these and that one's about as diabolical as it gets.
A lot of times I look at this as, okay, if I'm one of these other teams in the division, who do I not want to go here? You know, and right. I believe in strengthening your strengths. You know, if you're really good in this area, keep building on it. Keep adding those weapons. Keep doing that. Whether it's, you know, if you're a team that it's, you know, really strong in the defensive line. If you're a team that's, you know, and, you know, a good example of that is with the Eagles, another team with two first round picks. One of those being the number 6 overall pick right now, which belongs to New Orleans. I've got them taking Brian Brzee, defensive tackles back-to-back years. Jordan Davis last year, Brzee this year. I mean, you think about what that defensive front could be. I mean, it's Howie Roseman's dream. You know he wants to draft defensive line.
So basically,
you know
you're playing Jordan Davis 23 snaps a game, and then Brian comes in and plays the other 40. I don't know what you're doing. Against that team.
I mean, and then you put him on the field at the same time and you're good luck. And Brzee is a guy that I keep saying it differently. I'm pretty sure it's Brzee. We'll go with Brzee.
Brzee.
He's a guy that could play inside, could play outside. He could give you those snaps at different points, parts of the defensive line because he is such a gifted player. He's right around 300 pounds, but he moves really well. He's a really coordinated athlete. He's explosive. power in his hands. So, I think that when you think about the intangibles and the traits, he would be a really good fit for the Eagles there at number six.
Yeah, you want to go odd front look, Jordan Davis at nose, and then Brian at 4i, and don't like that. Don't like blocking that. We have yet to talk about the offensive linemen. This is not a ton of offensive linemen in your first round mock. You've got three offensive tackles. The first one you have off the board is Paris Johnson, the left tackle from Ohio State. Peter Skoronski, the left tackle from Northwestern, who has kind of been slotted into this spot for, you know, a year or two now, it feels like. And then also Broderick Jones, the offensive tackle from Georgia. So what was it about Johnson that makes you think he's the first one off the board?
Yeah, and again, that Olu Fashanu going back to school, that plays a big part in this, because I thought he was the clear top offensive lineman, period, in this draft. And so now I would put, you know, at this point, with what we know, it's still November, early December, with what we know right now, you know, my bet would be Paris Johnson being that first offensive lineman off the field. He's just so gifted for a big man. And his issues are, they're all fixable. You know, they're due to inexperience, not inability. And, you know, this is his first year as a starter at left tackle at the college level. He's playing at a high level. You know, he's had a few hiccups here or there, but he's playing at a high level. The pick that's interesting in this mock is Skoronski going to the Texans at number 10. Again, you know, at number one, they take an outlier. With Bryce Young. At number 10, they're basically doing the same thing with Skoronski, who, you know, does not have the length that you want to tackle. But when you think about, okay, I mentioned Nick Caserio joins the Patriots in 2001. You know who else joined the Patriots in 2001? Matt Light, who they drafted in the second round out of Purdue. Not a long arm guy, but he was their left tackle for, you know, like 11 years. They won, like, three Super Bowls with Matt Light, and he was a big part of that. So, you know, Nick Caserio knows, what it's like to win with a player like that. Skoronski, for what he doesn't have in terms of arm length, he makes up with the way he processes, the quick feet, his technical approach so he can get into position and stay in position. So he's just a darn good football player who, and even if he doesn't stay at tackle long term, you move him inside, you move him to right tackle. I mean, you want to strengthen that offensive line for whoever is at quarterback. They drafted Kenyon Green in the first round last year. Laramie Tunsil is not going to be in Houston. I think he's going to be entering the final year of his deal next year. Right. You know, who knows? He could be a trade piece at some point this offseason, maybe on draft weekend. So
somebody might use Laramie Tunsil to get draft picks? No.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like the offensive line's in flux. You know, it's something that Houston's trying to figure out right now, and Skoronski, you know, would not be a bad place to start if they want to do it in this draft.
Only one back in your first round mock, and it's Bijan Robinson from Texas, who I think, for those who... Oh, did I miss one? Oh, who did I miss? Where's the other one?
Last pick.
Oh, Jahmyr Gibbs. Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Alabama's leading receiver. Makes it hard. That's what threw me.
Right.
You do have two. Okay. Both of these guys give you something when you hand off, something when you throw to them. But Bijan feels like a different level than any other back that could possibly be in this draft or the next draft or maybe even the next draft. Still, how do you do the cost-benefit analysis of a first-round back?
Yeah, and that's obviously a part of this. And, you know, Bijan Robinson, you can make the case as a top 10, maybe even top 5 talent in this class, but he's not going to go that high. And when you're doing a mock like this, it really puts it in perspective because you're going team by team. And the first 20 teams in this mock, there's no way I could see them taking a running back. At least what we know right now. Now, if somehow, you know, a team, you know, if stay, let's say Saquon Barkley go for the Giants, or, you know, who knows how that'll all play out. But it's hard to find a team that's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense for them to address running back there in the top 20. So Robinson, it might fall a little bit. It's definitely possible. And Baltimore currently picking at 21. You think about why they drafted J.K. Dobbins in the second round a couple years ago. Obviously, injuries have completely derailed his career, unfortunately. The Ravens don't feel like a team, like a front office that would necessarily go running back in the first round. But if you have a high enough grade on Bijan Robinson and you think about your offense and think about Bijan Robinson and Lamar Jackson in the same backfield, ooh, that's a nightmare for defensive coordinators. So, and you mentioned it, the way that Bijan can help you in the passing game. You know, yes, he, the vision, the elusiveness, the balance as a ball carrier, but his ability to not only run the running back route tree, but go out in the slot and run routes and be effective that way. That's a game changer. That's something that can really change your offense. And so, you know, even though I don't love the Ravens addressing running back in the first round, it just might be one of those things where, hey, can we pass on this guy? And honestly, yeah, it was the same thing with Jahmyr Gibbs at 31 to the Eagles. The Eagles have not drafted a running back in the first round since 1986. It's been a long time. Okay, this is a team that just, it's a franchise that doesn't do it. But you look at it, okay, the Eagles have two first-round picks this year. This is their second mm-hmm. first-rounder. Maybe do they buck the trend a little bit? Miles Sanders is set to hit free agency.
Yep.
And again, you think about Jalen Hurts and Jahmyr Gibbs in that same backfield, what that could be. And Gibbs, I think, is a perfect fit for that offense with that run game, what he provides in the passing game. You mentioned it, Alabama's leading receiver. It's one of those things where, you know, no, we don't usually go running back this early, but it's the last pick in the first round. We think about the possibilities with a guy like that. And all of a sudden, Jahmyr Gibbs doesn't seem so crazy to the Eagles there.
Well, and I also think about, everybody thought Etienne got overdrafted a couple of years ago.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It may turn out that was a good spot for him. That would, you know, based on what he could produce in the Jags offense going forward, that might have been a pretty good choice at that spot. I think it was 24 overall.
Yep, so, I think so.
And Gibbs gives you a better pass catcher out of the backfield. I think Etienne's probably the better pure runner, better vision, but they both give you a lot and a lot of things that you can do with them. There's another running, because you've got some guys that kind of just missed the cut at mm-hmm. the bottom that you sent. Devon Achane is really interesting to me from Texas A&M. I've watched this guy basically carry their offense all season. If you watched against LSU, it was a great win for them. He made it go, and he is so tough for his size, and he's legit track fast, but he is a football player. Like, and yeah, he can give you stuff in the return game. Like, this is a guy, I don't know if he could sneak into the first round, because again, cost benefit analysis of a back in the first round, but my God, he's going to make somebody really happy.
Especially after he runs that 4.2 or 4.3, whatever right. it's going to be at the exactly. combine. I mean, it'll be interesting. What does he weigh? Is he 185? Is he 195? I mean, he's just, he looks like a track athlete, but he plays like a football player. I mean, he really does. He can string moves together. It's not just a speed guy out there. You know, he'll follow his blocks. He does a really nice job. I thought as a receiver this year, he really added that to his game. But yeah, he had over 200 yards rushing over the weekend. And what I did in this mock draft, so the teams that are not currently picking in the first round, they currently do not have a first round pick, mm-hmm. I included their first pick. So the Rams,
gave him
Saints,
to
the Browns, Dolphins. Think about
gave
that.
Him to the Dolphins.
what did I say earlier about strengthening your strengths? How yeah. I mean, you think about the philosophy with the Dolphins and everything they have going on there with Tyreek Hill and Jalen. I mean, it would be so much fun. You add Achane to that mix, and good gosh. I mean, just if you're a defensive coordinator, good luck trying to cover all that speed yeah. on the field.
Oh, I can't wait. I cannot wait. But speaking of speed on the field, I want to talk to you a little bit about these championship games this weekend, because yeah. I mm-hmm. think there's a couple people that everybody's going to be watching, be it for, you know, future NFL purposes or Heisman Trophy purposes. That Friday night game, we talked about Dalton Kincaid from Utah already, but USC and Utah, we mentioned Jordan Addison, who's in your mock. Caleb Williams for USC, I think he's going to lock down the Heisman Trophy this weekend if he hasn't already. But let's get people, because you've mentioned several times you're pretty sure the 2024 QB class is going to be better than 2023. You got Drake May from North Carolina and Caleb Williams from USC as a top two, potentially. That's pretty scary.
And I think, you know, Quinn Ewers is has the ability to, you know, put himself in that conversation. J.J. McCarthy, you think about what he could be a year from now at Michigan. And, you know, if Anthony Richardson goes back to school. So the quarterback class, I get it. Next year's class is always better. It gets talked about all the time. But it was true last year and it's true this year. And that's fine. And what's fascinating will be how do teams this year address quarterback knowing what's coming down the pike? You know, is that something where they look forward and say, you know what, we'll be patient this year. We'll wait for next year and see how it plays out. You know, earlier this week on the Colin Cowherd show, Sean Payton, you know, now doing a year in the media. I mean, he'll jump back in to it being a head coach at some point here, either next year or the year after, likely.
Maybe with one of these QBs.
Well, we know who his favorite is. He called Caleb Williams a generational prospect. He was ready to go that far. I think Sean Payton, I think, understands the value of words and, you know, not just throwing stuff out there. I mean, he was very, you know, poised with how he said it. And this is a player. And he also mentioned, it was interesting, how Caleb Williams is the type of talent that could force the NFL to adopt a lottery system when it comes to the draft, just like the NBA. So it's not as simple as, you know, cut and dry. You have the worst pick, you have the first pick, or you have the worst record, you have the first pick.
Right.
It, because of some of these quarterbacks. If, you know, a team like the Texans, you know, they're trending towards that number one pick right now. If they are all in on Bryce Young, you know, pulling starters, or, you know, if it's, you know, another team's coming on their heels about taking the number one pick. So it's interesting, you know, that's a separate discussion about the lottery and what that could mean. But yeah. Caleb Williams, I mean obviously it's, and what he did against UCLA, and then what he did last weekend. I mean, that game was a ton of fun against Notre Dame. It's not just the, you know, running around and, you know, being instinctive in terms of from the pocket, outside the pocket, moving the pocket. It's some of these throws down the field, his ability to really frustrate defenses with his legs, yes, and his arm is just so much fun to watch.
Well, and he's got that just kind of great athlete ability to change arm slots. You know, I don't think he doesn't have the baseball background that Mahomes did, but he does seem to have a natural gift for understanding, okay, I may have to throw this from three quarters, or I may have to throw this from sidearm, because that's how I'm going to get it there. And I hate to say it, it's just that natural athlete thing. Like, you know that kid at your school that was the best at every sport, even if he'd never actually played it. Like, that is what Caleb Williams is. And it's probably what Drake May is, honestly, because, you know, Drake May, if you put him on the basketball court, is going to dunk all over everybody. His older brother was an all ACC player at North Carolina in basketball. So, like, that's what we're talking about in terms of athleticism. And then you mentioned Anthony Richardson too, who, if he comes back to school, similar, you know, explosive athlete with a rocket arm. Like, it's a lot of traits, but the thing with Williams and with May, who, by the way, you get to watch Drake May against a really good Clemson defense. You also just got to watch Spencer Rattler against a really good Clemson defense. He had a terrible pick six, but the rest of the game, not so bad. You know, these are good athletes who are also really good quarterbacks.
And that's today's NFL game. And that's, again, going back to Stroud. That's one of the big questions. It's not that Stroud's a bad athlete. He's a good athlete. Right. But he's
just not a freak of nature like these people.
And he just doesn't seem as comfortable, you know, using his athleticism. He can do it, but it's not, he would rather be a pocket passer. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's, you know, you want guys that are pass first and are going to exhaust every single option before they go and try and create. But in the NFL, you have to be both. You have to be a passer and a creator. And CJ Stroud right now is a proven passer and unproven as a creator, where I think we can, you know, say that a guy like Caleb Williams is proven in both areas. So it's going back to the whole philosophical question with how teams are going to attack this draft, this quarterback class. It's something that we will be talking about the next 6 months as we look forward, as we look towards next year's draft. As you know, you look at some of the teams in the top 10 that could use a quarterback. The Lions need to figure out the quarterback for the future. They have two picks in the top 15 picks. You know, Carolina, possibly Seattle, as well as Geno Smith is playing. Maybe they see an opportunity to say, hey, you know, we don't want to be picking this early again. Let's maybe get our quarterback now. You know, what will, you know, what does Green Bay decide to do? Is Jordan Love a guy they're ready to move on? You know, the Raiders with the with Carr, maybe maybe being there, maybe not being there next year. You know, it's just there's a lot of question marks at quarterback with these teams picking in the top 12, and that's why they're picking top 12. And so how they attack quarterback in this draft, how they look, you know, to do their advanced scouting and look at the quarterbacks next year, that is going to be a big storyline for this draft. And I think that this mock draft shows that.
All right, last question before we go. This is a personal question, Dane.
Okay.
How much do you look at your Twitter mentions the day that a mock draft comes out?
Between that and the comments on the mock, I make sure I check it immediately just to make sure I didn't like
have a mistake
I totally forgot this guy, or, you know, so I do check it immediately just to make sure I didn't, there wasn't something that flagged, because these readers are so good at that. Like they find those so quickly. So usually that pops up right away. So I'll check it immediately and then I'll go work on something else, take my mind off of it. And then I do try to return to it just because, you know, I've spent a lot of time on this mock draft, more time than I care to admit, putting thought into each one. So I know I can defend every single pick in this mock draft. And so I will go back to it and kind of listen and hear why people, as much noise as there is, a lot of times people bring up good points. Like, hey, you know what? The Eagles haven't drafted a running back since 1986. What are you doing? And you know what? That's a fair point. It's a fair criticism about me having Jahmyr Gibbs there. So it does. There are a lot of times when, you know, a lot of these readers and things, they bring up good points that, you know, help me form opinions about the next mock draft and maybe the direction I go. So, no, it's definitely something that I look at and, you know, I don't take it personally, because I go into this understanding. I hate all 32 teams. I'm trying to make you. I'm trying to make you mad with my pick. So you know, I know that going in.
Just be nice, everybody. Be constructive, but be nice. That's all. That's
constructive.
All it takes.
It's a good word.
Yeah, exactly. Dane, this is going to be fun. Can't wait to see how people react. Can't wait to watch these championship games, and we'll reconvene next week and talk about it all.
Yeah, can't wait.
This was the Athletic Football Show.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.